Hey everyone, welcome back to another episode of the Cooking Without Looking TV show podcast. I'm Renee Rentmeester. I'm the creator and executive producer of the TV show as well as the podcast. And today we've got a really extra special guest. We have Tricia Wechter. Tricia, I got to your name, right?
Yay.
Yay! I'll give you guys a little background. I met Tricia in a meeting. It's called Sunrise and Shine. It's a group of people who are blind or visually impaired, or people who, work with the organization. It's NFB and it's Newsline, and we have a lot of fun. And I met Tricia, and I thought she had the most amazing story. Maybe a little angry, but it also got me excited. So Tricia, there you go. You can go from there.
Okay.
I'll
Thank
pop
you,
in once in a
Renee.
while.
Thanks for inviting me on.
Of course.
So, would you like me to start with telling my story?
Yeah, tell your story.
Okay. Hi, everyone. My name is Tricia Wechter. My company is Blind Girl Designs, and I'll just talk to you about my journey. I have retinitis pigmentosa, and probably it was diagnosed around the turn of the century, but I had very little issue with it within my career or my life for quite a long time. About 5 years ago, my visual field went from about 20%, which meant I could still work in the corporate world, to a 15 and then 11% visual field, which meant I could no longer do my job, which is very, very visual. The story that Renee is referring to, we'll just jump to that. The story that Renee is referring to is, so I lose my job. I basically lose my hometown, which is Montclair, New Jersey. We end up in Houston, Texas, and we get to Houston, and I realize that I can't see anything. And when we lived in New York, I was so used to traveling around the world and being on trains, buses, planes, and looking at all sorts of things, on computers. I didn't realize that the decline of my visual field was so significant. And the other thing is that in Houston, you actually have to have a car and drive, and you do not need to have that in the New York area. So when as this decline is happening, I'm in a new city, I don't have a job, and it was devastating. It was soul crushing. I lost my identity in terms of my career, and I didn't know people here. And my friend Dave had a factory here, and so I started working part-time with him. My background is being a merchant, which means that you work with fabrics and you tell trend direction in apparel. That's what my background is. And so I worked with him, and it was great. I mean, it made me feel like I was, doing something back in my field. And so when the clients would come to, his studio, we would be seated and my white cane would be there, but it would be folded up on the floor. You don't need to put the white cane in the middle of the table. So I would talk to them and advise them and give them my knowledge that I had from the industry. And we would have great meetings. And then one day, one of them asked that we come to their factory. And after the meeting, I told my friend, I have to use my white cane to go to the factory. There's no possible way that I can walk into a factory. And he said, no, you can't use your white cane. And it caught me so off guard that I didn't use my white cane. I left my white cane in the car, and then I put my hand on his shoulder, and we walked into the factory and walked across the factory floor, carefully. And after that, I really started getting really mad. First of all, I said to him politely, I cannot work with you anymore. Secondly, I raged because this white cane, when I first got it 10 years ago, transformed my life. At the time I got my white cane, we were at Knott's Berry Farm in San Diego, and suddenly all of the children disappeared from Knott's Berry Farm. Literally, it was like some kind of a, you know, spaceship came down and got all the kids. You know, of course, what really had happened was that I had tipped over on my peripheral vision and could no longer see in my lower quadrants. So we actually called in San Diego a blind services, and they were incredible. We called one late afternoon, and they took me in the next day and fitted me for a white cane and gave me orientation and mobility lessons. So when that happened, it changed my life. We were actually able to go to Disney in Los Angeles, and I was actually able to walk all around because, you know, a white cane with a rollerball on it is a pretty obvious thing. And I was making it very obvious, and I wasn't very good at it. So I'm sure that caught a lot of attention. Anyway, so my point of view about my cane has always been that it's been my salvation. And for him to have that attitude about it really distressed me and made me angry.
You see, and about that time in the meeting when you told this story, I was so angry. Like, what is there to be ashamed of? Apparently,
there's none. It's ridiculous. Exactly. I was born with a rare, you know, in the blind community, you would not consider retinitis pigmentosa a rare genetic eye disease. But within the general community, it is. Yeah. And there's no, it's a progressive, there's no cure for it. Some people go blind pretty quickly at a young age with it. Some people follow a path trajectory where it just slowly dims out into nothing. So it's kind of an erratic kind of a disease. But it's, number one, I don't think any disability should be something to hide. Right. I think that's ridiculous.
Right.
I think we should embrace who we are on this world and help each other. That's what I think.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yes.
Oh my God.
So one morning, so truthfully, Renee, I went into therapy and I talked to the therapist about it because I was so angry, and we were able to work through it. And one morning I woke up, which was actually about a year and a half ago. I got up. I literally stood out of bed like, you know, it was, you know, like a musical. Really. I was 6 foot tall at that moment. And I stood out of bed like Les Miserables. And I said, damn it, I'm going to start my own business. And it's going to be called Blind Girl Designs. And everyone's going to know I'm blind. And we're going to have white canes and everything. And I actually did it. I started a business, and we have t-shirts and hoodies, and we have 13 pieces of art that integrate white canes into the art, from snowflakes to Christmas trees to flags, anything we can think of, we put white canes in the art. And I started that about a year and a half ago. We got our website up last April and started selling. And then last November, I did Let's Go Shopping event that Laura Legendary does. And then it's just kind of evolved. Then they said, why don't you start going to conventions? And so I started going to conventions, and then the whole thing just kept going. And people would say, oh, I love purple, so I added purple. Or we need zip hoodies, so I added zip hoodies. And so it's just really grown from there. And for me, can I tell you how wonderful and healing it is to be at events and conventions with other people who are visually impaired and blind? It is like a dream come true. It is fantastic. The amount of support within the blind community is so extraordinary. And when people come to our table, I ask them if they're sighted or visually impaired or blind, and they tell me, and then I ask if I can take their hand, and then we run their hand over the patterns because they're slightly tactile ink. I use heat transfers that are vinyl. And the reason I do that is because the ink lays on top of the fabric as opposed to submerged in it. And so you can actually run your finger up the white cane that's on the pattern or feel that there is a Christmas tree on the pattern. And so we do this every time we work with anyone. We touch it. We all touch the patterns. And we think it's really important, and we really look forward. We just discovered that we can now do puff ink with this heat transfer. And so we're talking about now we can do Braille. Yeah, so we're all excited about Braille. And I'm working on a Happy Holidays that can be both written and then also maybe, I'm thinking Brailing the Happy Holidays right up the sleeve. I think that would be, because people were talking about, what if we put it on the chest? It's kind of personal if people want to read my Braille. I'm like, okay, that's like a good
crossing
point.
Crossing a couple HR lines there.
Exactly. So then I thought that was a great point. And then I thought, but how great to put Happy Holidays using, you know, our vinyl on the chest and then running Happy Holidays in Braille down the sleeve where somebody actually can touch and run their hand down the sleeve and read it. So I just came up with that. I kind of resolved that last night and I'm going to work on that before Christmas. Now that we have the puffy guy, I really want to have that as something because I've had so many requests for Braille. So yes, I'm finding this to be really healing and wonderful and exciting to do this business.
Now, do you still know this gentleman who...
I do. We're still friends. And he actually, you know, in addition to our t-shirts and hoodies, this is somebody that I hired as a young designer in 2000 in New York. And we've been friends, traveled all over the world for 20 years. And so we're still friends. It's just that his point of view and my point of view on this particular subject, you know, we're at odds. And he manufactures, we also do dresses. We have a t-shirt dress and we have a swing dress that's a sleeveless wide swing dress with pockets. And then we have what we call the pocket dress, which is a scoop neck dress, 3/4 sleeve. And it's got two big pockets on the front. And he actually manufactures that in Houston. So I design it and his team does the sewing.
Now, do the pockets fit? Like if you fold your cane up and do the pockets?
No. Actually, on the swing dress, there is side pockets on the seams. So you can put your hands in the pocket. And the pocket dress, you know, the pocket dress is, you know, where you could, it's got pretty big pockets, but you would want to maybe throw your phone in there. It's a design element as well. Sure. And a lot of people dress that dress up. They dress that dress down. I've worn that dress, you know, totally dressed up with dress up stuff and then totally just throw it over my swimsuit too, because the fabric is polyspan, which is the number one fabric in women's apparel in pretty much the world. And so it's a very, very versatile fabric. It dries really fast. You could actually hand wash it or throw it in the washing machine. But all of my dresses are made out of that fabric. So they're really easy and they've got spandex in them. So they won't bag or anything. Same with our cardigans. Yeah. So he makes those for me and we're still friends. I just understand now that people have different education and point of views. And I just want to be ebullient about my white cane to anyone that comes in contact with me. I would like them to know that it's not a walking stick. I'm not planning to hike up a mountain. By the way, in my case with a rollerball, probably that's kind of crazy.
You'd be going and rolling backwards.
Exactly. I just, you know, and when kids stare at me, a lot of times they stare at me, I'll pause. If they approach me, I'll tell them that I'm blind and this is a blind cane. And if they want to touch it, I'm totally, sometimes they like swing it around and stuff. Because usually, you know, the moms, you know, try to drag them away a little bit because they're staring. But I feel like, you know, I feel like it should be like seeing an ice cream truck.
Right.
And staring at it and being like, wow, let's go check out that ice cream truck.
A learning experience.
I'm like, exactly. You see me and my white cane. Wow, let's go check that out. What's happening? I've never seen a blind person or I've never seen a white cane before. Let's talk about it. Let's get to know each other. You know, and then sometimes people say, you know, do you want a wheelchair? Which unfortunately, if you travel, sometimes the only choice you have is a wheelchair, even though you're totally mobile. I don't know where I was going with that, Renee. I just lost my train of thought about the wheelchair.
Okay.
Sorry.
But you know what? I still am having a problem with somebody not changing their minds. Like, can't he understand? Would he not want a person who perhaps they can't walk very well? Would he want them to hide their cane?
Interestingly enough, he himself has a very small business, so I don't believe he's going to come up to, this is going to become an issue with him in his life. But, you know, there's a very high unemployment rate among blind people. So I think I kind of look at him as the general public. You know, it's not just one singular person that would have that reaction.
Right.
I've had other bosses, I will tell you, now that because I've been using my white cane for 10 years, I didn't really have to use it in my business environment, but I definitely had to use it, you know, going into theaters. There was a lot of places where I had to use it. And my bosses knew that I had a white cane, and here I am, you know, forecasting trends and traveling all over the world. But I did have a couple instances I realized that I think I kind of buried, where they both, two different other bosses requested that I did not use my white cane going to an event, like a fundraiser or a theatrical event. And I put my hand on their shoulder, but it was more entering the theater and then sitting down and then walking out. It wasn't like doing an entire presentation. Neither one of them asked me for that. And I think at the time since I was mostly mobile and functioning, doing my job without my white cane, I was really using my white cane to get back and forth to the bus, from the bus to home, you know, like I said, any place where it transitioned from light to dark at night. It didn't really affect me at that time, but you know, I have had significant vision loss since then. Mature enough and confident enough at either of the times that I was asked before this, that I would say, screw you, dude. I just sat with those guys today. I just gave them the trends for the next 12 months in fashion. I just came back from London. I was in Hong Kong 2 weeks ago. Who cares if I have a white cane? My entire team knew I had a white cane. So I don't know. So he's not the singular person that I've come across with that point of view. And it's more not, they all know that I have retinitis pigmentosa. It's more that they're afraid of the reaction of the clients, of the people that are around us. And of course, now I'm, you know, like, well, if you look at a picture of me, I'm holding a white cane up, just in case you missed the white cane thing.
I love that picture.
I do it.
It's just like a little finger up.
because you know, I just feel like as many people as can see that picture and identify that as a white cane or know that I'm visually impaired, then we have more people that, you know, are on team learning. And I think it's really, really important.
Well, that's why we have our show and the podcast too, just to make people understand. I think once people understand, I don't think they're as rude as to ask you not to use it. I mean, like,
correct.
I just can't even imagine that. In fact, I would think that the clients that they were so worried about, it's not like you're in the corner smoking crack or something.
Right, I know.
You know, I think that the clients that they were worried about would probably be very compassionate. And I
honestly think that too. I think so too, Renee. I think so too. And now that I have my cane all the time, you know, people will, depending on the person, some people will just be very comfortable with it and just say, so, you know, how much can you see? What do you need? You know, anybody that works with me with my art, I can see, I have central vision and bright light, right? So then they ask me, how can you see this computer screen?
Yeah.
And I would say, I cannot see you. Okay, I'm looking at the screen. So just so you know, I can see this on the screen as I roll my eyes back and forth, because I can't see the whole screen at one time, right? But I can roll my eyes back and forth, get the visual memory, and then I can see the entire picture of the screen, right? But just while I'm doing that, nothing else exists in my world. I can't see you. I know I can hear those other people behind me. I have no idea where they are or what their thing is. And so people that work with me or get to know me then understand, you know, what my vision is. And my friends all know what the limitations of my vision are. And when I meet people, like I said, sometimes some people just think that, you know, I have no sight, which is very cool, because then I can tell them I have some sight. And other people are just like running, ah, my God, this is so scary. It's a white kid. It might eat me. You know,
actually, like, I probably would whack them up.
Well, I always say, you know, they do teach you self-defense skills with these things. So you wouldn't really want to get in my way. So, yeah, I just, but again, it's teach, 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 educate, educate, acceptance, acceptance, DEI, man, people ask me and I'm like, the eyes don't work, but everything else works. So let's just keep moving.
Right. Our eyes yeah. are like the least of what we are.
Exactly. And what I found doing my business was, I think the biggest fear at the time when I had this vision loss, I had a lot of cognitive issues as well, which I lost hearing, which they said was not Usher's, but there were, it happened simultaneously. And I just had a lot of cognitive problems. And when I kind of came out of that year, and I realized that most of what I did from a design or trend standpoint was already in the library in my brain. I was like, oh my God, I can do this. I mean, you think that, you know, my job was called the EYE for companies. So my job was to direct all of the product. Isn't that crazy? All of what the product looked like or what the apparel looked like in a company, and that it hung together, it was cohesive, what the colors are, right? That was actually the name of my job. And so the loss of that, and also the fact that I have a degree in theater and literature, and that I was always really artsy when I was a kid, the loss of that, you know, was devastating. When I realized that there's workarounds with that, and how much stuff I knew intellectually or visual things that were already in my brain, it's really allowing me to be just really expansive in our company, you know, Blonde Girl Designs. It's just amazing. And then, and I have to give a definite shout out to my son, Robert, who is willing to listen to me talk about Blonde Girl Designs and, you know, what our plans should be and look at the art. He is sighted. And just interestingly, my son is, he's 25. He is bipolar. He has learning disabilities. He has Tourette's. He has OCD, ADHD. He cannot read or write. And you would never know any of this if you met him. And he took speech. He didn't have speech when he was young, and he took speech for 12 years. And the interesting thing about that is that before we knew he was special needs, he started traveling around the world with us, and my husband would take him to museums and let him listen to the headphones that they give you at museums. And then as he got older and realized he was special needs, that became more and more critical when we traveled to teach him about the world, because the way that he needed to absorb information wasn't going to be from the written book. Yeah. And so it's interesting now. So both of us listen to audiobooks. It's really fun. Cool. But I know. But I just want to, you know, shout out to the people. My husband is incredible. He takes everything to the post office. And my son was in at the NFB Florida. And we had his friend Euless come to train him. And there's a lot of support here. And within the blind community, I just want to give a shout out to everybody who says, wow, I would really like purple, or how about a zip putty in that line? You know, I love it. It's a fearless community, you know, and it's wonderful. If they like stuff, they buy it. If they don't, they sometimes will tell me why. So, and then just the ideas of what, you know, where to go and what they would like to see. They're wonderful, wonderfully supportive and communicative. It's just definitely a joy.
You know what? And it's a note that, you know, a lot of people don't know people who are blind. And when they do come across a person who's blind, they get nervous because they don't want to say or do the wrong thing. And
it's exactly.
Like, not, but you know, it's interesting. Anything is doing right. The wrong thing.
Yeah. Agree. Running away screaming, you know, probably isn't the most effective solution to, you know, having not seen a blind person. Although interestingly, they probably have seen a lot of blind people, but because we don't all use white canes, right?
Right.
And some people have peripheral vision. Like if you're Stargardt's, you don't need to have probably a white king. And they just don't know that they're dealing with white, with blind people.
Well, Trisha, so, that is, I love your story. It's a fascinating
thank you, Renee.
I didn't get too mad this time because I knew what was happening. So I've calmed down. But
good.
But what I was going to ask you, your cinnamon rolls, and it's a family cinnamon rolls, are going to be on our website, www.cookingwithoutlookingtv.wordpress.com. If you want to go over those cinnamon rolls, they look and sound amazing.
Yes, this recipe is my husband's mother, so it's called Tom's Mom's Cinnamon Rolls. And they are, they were a recipe that she made. She may have gotten it from her mother. I got it at a young age because she used to make these for her family. And then my husband was quite interested, really loved tactile things. So I started learning how to bake with yeast dough. And so these are yeast rolls. And do you want me to kind of walk through the recipe a little bit?
Yeah, just a little bit.
Okay, so let's just visualize this in our heads, right? These are cinnamon rolls. And if you've ever been to a Cinnabon or any place with the cinnamon roll, you know that the dough is rolled up tightly in a pinwheel kind of a shape. So we're going to walk through the recipe, but I just want you to remember, it sounds a little complicated, but we're going to make it pinwheels. At one point, we're going to have dough flat on a counter. We're going to brush water at one edge of it, the far edge. And we're going to brush butter on that baby. And then we're going to sprinkle cinnamon sugar. And then we're going to roll it up into a cylinder shape. And we're going to roll it on top of the wet edge. That's going to seal the dough. And then you just take a scraper or a knife and you just chop that into 12 pieces, put them on a pan and rise them. So I want you to just go frontwards with me and say, oh yeah, I know what a cinnamon roll looks like. And that's like the last step of it. So that as we start at the beginning, it doesn't seem really confusing. So the first thing that I would do is proof the yeast in a small bowl, which it calls for 1 tablespoon of yeast, 1 teaspoon of sugar, and a cup of warm water, which shouldn't be hot enough to burn you because quick rise yeast will die really fast. Proofing yeast, it should always bubble on the top. If it didn't bubble, throw it away, rinse the pan out, make sure it's clean, and do it over again. And then set that aside for a second, and then mix 2 cups of milk, 1/2 cup of mashed potatoes. This is important. Buy a potato, peel it, mash it. You can add a little milk in it, whatever you want. You can eat 1/2 the other cup by yourself because they're delicious. But don't use any instant potatoes. There's no substitute for the mashed potato. You can buy them somewhere maybe, but don't use instant. They have to be real mashed potatoes.
Okay.
And 1/2 cup of sugar, 1/2 cup of shortening, and white sugar is what we use. 1/2 cup of shortening, not corn oil, not any cool oil, not coconut oil, but shortening, like Crisco type That's of shortening, large. A hard shortening. Remember, this is a very old recipe. And right. So these are very significant taste effects and texture effects. And then 1 tablespoon of salt. So we put that all in a bowl, just glop it all in a bowl. And then I stick it in the microwave. This was not Tom's mom's original thing, but I found this was much faster than boiling a pan. Just stick the plastic bowl in the microwave for 3 minutes. It just gets everything kind of melted. Stir it with a whisk or spoon or whatever kind of a tool you have. Because what we're doing is we're mixing everything together. We're breaking down those mashed potatoes into the milk and the shortening will become liquid. So now you have a big bowl of liquidy stuff. So then you just set that aside for a minute because it doesn't have to be hot when you integrate it. And then in a bowl, mix 1.05 pounds of flour, which is actually 3 1/3 cup, 1/2 teaspoon of baking soda, and 1 teaspoon of baking powder. Now, if you're a baker, you're like, why are we using a dry, you know, usually we'd use those ingredients to rise a quick bread. I don't know why. But
well, that's Tom's,
mom put them in. So we're going to put them in because this will cause a quick rise effect. So we're going to, once the wet and the dry hit, the baking soda and the baking powder is going to cause a quick rise effect in addition to the yeast. So just add the dry. So you have your bowl of wet stuff, right? So you're going to start adding your mixture of your flour and your baking soda and baking powder into the wet and just keep, I actually use my hand. I just start dumping it in there and use my hand and stir it all around in the bowl and stir it around. It's going to just be very, very wet. And it will just be like a very, very thick pancake dough. So then cover that with a wet cloth, because remember, this is a really old recipe. Cover it with a wet cloth and then just set that aside. It's going to start rising on a very, very soft kind of sloppy rise. And then remove the cloth after an hour. Okay, so it's going to have risen to the top. Usually I put oil or something on my hand, get my hand in there and punch that baby down. You know, with yeast stuff, you need to get all the air bubbles out. So punch it all the way down as much as you can. Take some random flour out of the bag, throw it on the counter, dust it so that in a 12 by 12, you know, kind of a space, you have a good working space, and then scrape the dough from the bowl onto the dusted counter. So now you're going to have a very, very soft kind of oozy dough on the counter. So if you have a pastry scraper, that will really be helpful to keep the dough from dripping down onto the floor. So you'll want to then slowly add 1.05 pounds again, which is 3 1/3 cups of flour, kneading the dough as you add the flour. Now, originally, as you start, you're going to be adding the flour and you're going to be actually using your pastry scraper, or whatever tool you have, or your hands. To be pushing the dough towards the center. Keep pushing the dough towards the center, because what you're wanting to do is develop the gluten by all this movement. And then eventually, once you get all of the flour in there, you should have a nice soft ball of dough. So never tear gluten. That's like the wrong thing to do. Always push gluten towards each other. So you should have a nice round bowl when you're finished. And it's okay to keep putting flour on your hands if it gets sticky. Not a problem at all, or oil, whichever you prefer. So now you're going to have a nice soft, nice ball of dough, and then put that in. I didn't put this on here, but put it in a, I would have greased the bowl for it to rise in at this point, and let that dough rise for an hour. Cover again with a wet cloth. While you're doing that, don't go hang out anywhere else. Come back and make the filling. Because we're trying to be a little efficient here. The filling is 2 cups of white sugar with 3 tablespoons of cinnamon. Now, that's what I'm a really cinnamony girl. So that's the amount of cinnamon that we like in our family. If you are a trained chef or you're used to working with spices, you may want to go a little less cinnamon or a little more. To me, this is perfection to have 3 tablespoons. So then you just mix that all together. So you're just making cinnamon sugar. And then on the side, you're going to also melt a half a cup of butter and just set that aside. And again, you could just throw that in the microwave and melt it in like 30 seconds. But what you're going to do is split that in half, because we're going to end up with 2 cylinders of dough. So you'll use a half 1 cup of the sugar per roll. So each roll will get a half of the butter and a half of the sugar. We're going to split it in half. Okay, now it's been an hour. We have beautiful dough. It's all glossy and gorgeous because you didn't tear your gluten and you pushed it in and made a soft ball. So now punch that dough down again. Get those air bubbles out. Get that gluten to continue to develop. And then once you get it all pounded out in the bowl, and you feel so zen, by the way, you didn't do yoga or meditation, then you divide it in half. Then you can divide the dough into 2 parts, because we're going to need to make 2 cylinders, right? So just take that dough and roll it out, either if you're me, with your fist, you just punch it out into a 12 by 12 square. If you prefer, you can use a dusted rolling pin. Because the thing about the rolling pin is sometimes it will tear the dough and make holes in it, which is okay. But you don't want too many holes, because the sugar will start falling through and make a big mess. So I like to be able to manipulate the dough with my hands and my fingers and kind of push it here and there to get a good 12 by 12 square. Now we're standing there looking at this 12 inch square of dough, and you're saying, where do I put the water? Well, we're going to roll towards the top. So the farthest seam away from you, brush it with water. The water only goes on the edge of the seam. We are putting super glue on this dough, and that is water that will cause the dough to glue together to the other dough. So we want to make sure that no butter or sugar goes on our super glue section of our dough here, right? So once we put the water on it, if we have to put a little more water in it, no problem, but don't get any sugar or butter on it or it will not seal the roll. So then after you do that, now you just take a quarter of your cup of butter and you start brushing it all over the dough, except for not this, not only tasty, but it actually glues the cinnamon sugar to the dough. So then sprinkle the cinnamon sugar. And then I usually have my hands, I kind of spread the cinnamon sugar around so it looks pretty even. So it's yummy. Don't forget to go all the way to the edge. Those are going to be rolls. Don't cheat those guys with dinner rolls because you didn't put cinnamon sugar at the edge. So go all the way to the edge. Be fearless. And so then start rolling the dough towards the edge where the water is. And you need to use two hands to do this. And I always roll it a little bit and tug it a little bit. Roll it and tug it to make the roll nice and tight. And it doesn't tear the dough or anything. But it's the rolls come out better if they're rolled a little more tightly than loosely, because it keeps all that cinnamon yummy sugar inside the roll. So once you've done that, then just roll it and that seam should be on the bottom. You have this beautiful roll just filled with cinnamon and sugar and butter. Now take your pastry knife or whatever thing you're using, cut it in half, cut each of the halves in half. Okay, so now you have four parts. Then cut each of those pieces into three. That's how I do it. It creates 12 rolls that are pretty much the same size. Or if you have a great eye, just chop 12 pieces up. That's not really me. But if you can do it, thumbs up to you. So now you have 12 pinwheels. So you're going to want to stick these in. Start in your half sheet pan. Put them in your half sheet pan that has been sprayed with a cooking oil, rubbed with a cooking oil. Or two 9x12 pans, because you can separate. I usually put it in two 9x12 pans so that we can save some for later. And so, and then you basically just repeat that process that we just discussed with the other lump of dough, the rest of the sugar and the rest of the butter. So then after you do that, you're like, ooh, this is so pretty, but they're kind of small on the roll. Well, we're going to cover them with wax paper. And this is to make sure that the dough doesn't get too dry. And then just let them sit at room temperature for another hour. And you're going to come and say, oh my God, this is beautiful. They rose so beautifully. And then once you do that, then you, in the meantime, because you're not a slacker, you would have preheated your oven to 325 degrees. And then slide this pan or pans in the middle rack on the oven and set the temperature for 30 minutes. Oh, at about 20 minutes, your house is going to smell so great. If your house, you could take a little peek at about 20 minutes to just check and see how they're doing. It's a low temperature, so they shouldn't brown too much because you don't want really crusty cinnamon rolls. But in 30 minutes, they should be looking pretty good. And then after you take them out, your whole house smells so great. In my case, I rip one off and eat it. But in the case of my husband and son, they love the sugar sauce. They love to have that white frosting on the top. So if you're a sugar sauce lover, while you were waiting for that 30 minutes, you should have busily been making this sugar sauce, which is super simple. It's 2 cups of powdered sugar, 2 tablespoons of melted butter, and 3 to 4 tablespoons of milk. Now, let me just tell you about this milk. But powdered sugar melts really fast when you put butter and milk in it. Right. So be cautious when you're putting the milk in, you know, because first of all, if you put too much milk in, you literally just have to throw everything down the drain. There's no saving it. Seriously, you can't add cornstarch or some miracle thing to it. And I wouldn't start taking my powdered sugar bag and adding to that. So just be careful. Slowly add the milk. and then just keep beating it. And if, as you do that, what's great about that, it gets all those powdered sugar lumps out. You know, if you're really somebody into the kitchen, you would have already sifted your powdered sugar, so there won't be lumps. But if you're like me, you just dump those 2 cups into the bowl, and then you can use your fork to get rid of all those lumps while you put the butter and the milk in there. So once it gets to be drizzly, like you like it, this is all about you, right? Then you should drizzle it over the 2 pans of rolls, and then they are ready to share. Now, I didn't put this in here, but once they're completely cooled, and I mean the bottom is totally cooled, everything about this is totally cooled, you can wrap foil around them and stick them in the freezer and take them out in a week or 2 weeks, or probably there's enough fat in this that they'd probably be fine for a month, and then let them come to room temperature to enjoy them again. Now, with yeast breads, you really don't want to microwave them to warm them up. So if you feel the need to microwave them and stick more butter on them at some future point, like give it like 15 seconds, because this is a beautiful homemade roll and microwaves destroy yeast bread. But the best thing is to just let it go to room temperature. They will be delicious. And then you can eat the rest of the rolls.
Well, that sounds great, Trisha. I think I'm going to try this weekend. I'm going to try and give those babies a try. And
yay! That's awesome, Ray.
And for all of you guys, for all of you guys listening, again, you can go to our website and get Trisha's recipe at www.cookingwithoutlookingtv.wordpress.com. And Trisha, how can people reach out to you?
Oh, my company is called Blind Girl Designs, BLINDGIRLDESIGNS. And you add a .com to that, and that is my website. If you need to place your order by phone, the very first thing that will pop up on my website is our phone number. You just tap our phone number and then tap again, and it will call our company. And then we will walk you through to place an order. And all of our items have item descriptions on them. So a lot of people like to cruise through and read the item descriptions, which I try to make, you know,
fun. They're pretty
fun.
Cool. They're really cool. Nice.
I try to make it be how I would like to read it. So we do lots and lots of phone orders. We do lots of phone orders or other, you know, you can put the order in. We take every credit card there is. And that's how you can get a hold of me. Well, and I'd love for you guys to call us. Thank you.
Oh, thank you so much, Trisha. I really enjoyed speaking with you today. It was a great time. And again, thank you for helping us change the way we see blindness. Have a wonderful day.
Thank you, Renee. Thank you so much. You too.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.